time for our Monday experts. And this week we're talking about flags. Great timing, really. We've all got the Olympics on in the background here at RNZ. A great chance to see the different flags of countries participating in the Games. Well, Dr. Malcolm Mulholland has a PhD in flags and national identity and is now a research development advisor at Massey University. If you've got a question for Malcolm on flags, you can text it into 2101 or email me, jesse@rnz.co.nz. And Malcolm joins us now. Hello there.
Kia ora, Jesse.
Thank you for your time today. How are you getting on?
Yeah, not too bad.
Great. Shall we start with an obvious question? What is a flag?
Yeah, it's not such an obvious question, though, sometimes. Look, a flag is normally of a rectangular shape, and it is in its most basic form an identity marker. So it's there to basically tell you who the holder of the flag is or where they come from, and that's really the purpose behind the flag.
What's the appeal for you, Malcolm? Why did you decide to study them?
It came about by accident, really, for me, because back in 2010, we were doing a book on the Treaty of Waitangi and constitutional change, and what I was interested in is, well, two things. One, were Māori involved in having any say in three of New Zealand's most prominent symbols, so the flag, the anthem, and also the name New Zealand, to which we hadn't been. And then the second part to that was, well, if we're to basically bring about constitutional change and give real voice to the Treaty of Waitangi, what might that mean for those symbols? Perhaps that's something tangible that might capture the public's imagination and actually demonstrate what constitutional change actually means in real terms.
Okay, and that sort of sent you down, what do they say, down the rabbit hole of flags in general, huh?
Yeah, it did. I mean, I didn't expect there to be, I suppose, the amount of public reaction that there was at the time. I can recall Prime Minister John Key being asked for his opinion. He is very keen to basically assure the public he wasn't looking to change anything anytime soon. That changed within a matter of a few years, of course, because we got on to the flag referenda. But from there, I just was asked to speak at public gatherings, and then also I was asked to be a member of the flag referendum panel.
How was that experience?
Challenging. Real eye-opener in terms of what people know about New Zealand history or the lack of about things such as invented traditions. So one of the things that we heard constantly throughout the process is that our forebearers who had fought in World War One and Two fought under the flag and died for the flag. But my research has shown that that clearly wasn't the case. We actually predominantly fought under the Union Jack. I found that it was a very polarising debate. And also it's very hard to divorce, you know, having a good debate about what a flag should represent away from the politics of the day. So yeah, there are a few learnings in that.
This is actually a listener, a question from a listener. We won't dwell on the referendum, but a listener is interested in how would you go about replacing our flag now? Would you do the process differently?
Yeah, I don't know the honest answer to that. I think the process that we went through was probably the most democratic process we could have done.
And democratic to a fault, Malcolm.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, look, if we really wanted to change the flag, then you'd just do it by decree or by a majority in the House and do it by legislation in the New Zealand context. And, you know, if you look at the Canadian flag back in the 1960s when Lester Pearson, who was the Prime Minister then, decided to change the flag, he just simply did it by committee and then passed an act. And so that's probably the simpler way to go. But you've also got to get buy-in and take the public with you as well.
Yeah. Tell me about that Canadian flag, because you quite like that one, eh?
Yeah, I'd say that that's the gold standard of national flags, and certainly it's regarded as such by vexillologists, people who study flags. I mean, it's symmetrical, it's very basic, it only has two colours, and there's also some really relevant symbolism for the Canadians, of course, with the maple leaf being there. So it ticks a lot of boxes.
What boxes are you trying to tick, though, when you are, well, I was going to say when you're designing a country's flag, but when you're looking at a flag, when you're appraising a flag, what boxes should it be ticking?
Well, it needs to be simple. It needs to be able to be seen from a distance and to be easily identified. And most people, when they think about a flag, they think of it unfurled, so what it might look like in the wind. But you also have to think about what it may look like, for example, at a press conference with the Prime Minister standing in front of it. You don't want it to be too busy in terms of colours. Really, at most, you only want three primary colours. And you want some relevant symbolism in there, I think, something that is unique and something that, you know, the public can easily identify with and go, you know what, that's us.
So what do you think of the current New Zealand flag when measured by that criteria?
It doesn't do so well. So the most obvious one is that it gets easily confused with Australia's. We've seen that play out a number of times on the political stage internationally. And also it has the Union Jack there. That's okay, I suppose, in terms of recognising our heritage. But it's only one of six countries in the world that uses it. So we have ourselves, Australia, the Cook Islands, Tuvalu, Fiji and Niue. And also it's not unique in terms of the Southern Cross. So again, Australia has the Southern Cross, as does Brazil, Samoa, Papua New Guinea. So, you know, when I'm looking for that flag, I'm looking for something that is simple, something that stands out, but something that screams New Zealand.
I've just realised it's going to be hard to avoid this referendum in this chat. Which of the ones that were shortlisted did you like the best on those criteria?
Ooh, I probably liked Lockwood. So I could have gone for either or, to be honest. But one thing that struck me through the debate, we kind of began from a position of people weren't very keen on changing it, and there, of course, was a very passionate uproar to that, and fair enough. And then I felt as the debate went on and on and on, more and more people jumped on board with the idea of it, but it became more difficult to kind of identify what that clear front runner would be. And so when I now look back at the Lockwood designs, I just wonder if perhaps we identified that we needed to bring more people on in the debate at the earlier stages, and therefore we went with a compromise design, if you like, because it has, you know, the Southern Cross
people,
as well as the Silver Fern.
Yeah, remind people what they look like.
Yeah, sure.
Feels like a million years ago now.
Yeah, the Lockwood design had both the Silver Fern and the Southern Cross on it, and so it was a bit of a bob each way. The Southern Cross was there because, you know, it's a signal to what our current flag is. But obviously we were getting rid of Union Jack and replacing that with the Silver Fern. But I felt as the debate went on, perhaps we could have just settled on a Silver Fern type design.
Okay. What are the most common colours used in flags around the world?
Red, white and blue.
Okay, so that we've got all three of those. What else might you see on flags?
You can see a number of symbols. They're normally to do with the sky. So it's stars, the moon, the sun, and often a cross. And the cross is often about the country's, you know, religious roots.
Someone wants us to look at Albania's flag. They reckon it's the coolest. Can you remember that one offhand?
Oh, no.
But I'm just Googling it.
Oh,
yeah.
Look if I can.
Do it. A red flag with a silhouetted black double-headed eagle in the centre.
Yes.
It is
and
pretty impressive.
I did actually think of that as you were asking me. It is a cool flag, isn't it? It's, yeah, I mean, look, it's you know, two colours. The design is a little bit intricate. So one of the golden rules of flag design is that a child should be able to draw it from memory, but it's also symmetrical. So I think, you know, cool colours, but perhaps we could simplify that design in the middle.
To be fair, that Lockwood flag wouldn't have been super easy for a child to draw with that silver fern.
It would have been easier, though, I think, than our current flag.
Do you?
So, you know, I mean, look, they're never going to get it perfectly right. They're going to probably forget the number of fronds. one would hope they may not forget how to depict the Southern Cross, but I think they'd probably have a closer shot at pulling it off than what they would our current flag.
Yeah. Any other national flags that you really like?
I quite like Tonga's flag. I think that's quite cool. Also like the Japan flag because of its simplicity.
Okay, so, hang on a sec. So Tonga flag is red, and in the top left-hand corner there's a white box with a red cross on it.
That's it. So obviously, you know, for Tonga, religion is really important, and that's why the cross is there. And red, you can have red for a variety of reasons, but for example, in the Māori world, red's a very important colour because it denotes tapu. And it was really important when they came up with the current flag that red be in there in some way, shape or form. But again, it's very simple. It's just red, it's white, and it's got a cross in what we would call a canton.
Somebody is delicately suggesting that perhaps the flag referendum panel could have used a flag designer on the team.
Yes, and we certainly had that criticism levelled at us. I think there's a couple of things to say. One, we weren't responsible for who was on the panel. Two, I do recall we engaged with designers. And three, we didn't want designers to be excluded from the process. If anything, we wanted them to submit their designs. And New Zealand's a small place, and we felt that we may run into a bit of a conflict of interest because it's such a small community.
Yeah, right. If someone's on the panel, they're probably going to be related in some way to the people applying. Someone wants to know what you think of the flag of South Africa. And for the people listening who can't, who don't have access to Google, that's quite a multicoloured flag. It looks like a horizontal capital letter Y in green. And then there's three or four other colours as well, red, blue, and black and yellow, sort of filling out the spaces made by that horizontal Y. You know the flag?
I do, yeah. I would say it's probably one of the more busier flags.
Yeah.
But I do understand that it takes, it tells a story of a journey from its African roots through to the arrival of the Dutch through to apartheid South Africa and, you know, post that era. So, you know, I think it does tick a lot of boxes in terms of the story. The only thing is, you know, would somebody be able to remember where the red, where the blue, where the black and yellow sit? I mean, that's one of the tricks to a good flag design.
Tell me about the Nepalese flag. I know you're quite keen on this one.
Yeah, I mean, look, it just stands out because it's a different shape. And it's quite cool in that regard. It's got essentially two triangles sitting on front of each other, and they've got two symbols there, and I just think for that reason it kind of stands out to me.
What do you think of the Australian flag?
I wouldn't rate it, if I can say that, Jesse.
Like the New Zealand one, you're not going to much like the Australian one, are you?
Yeah, you're probably right. I just think you can do a lot better. I really do, and you know, I think we've come a long way since our British colonial days, belonging to the Empire and then the Commonwealth. We're certainly independent now, and I think we can better demonstrate our maturity as a nation in our most prominent symbol.
Are we mostly talking about countries when we're talking about flags, or can something have a flag that isn't a country?
Yeah, you can certainly, anybody can have a flag, for that matter. If you wanted, you know, the whānau of Mulligan to have a flag, you could, by all means, go ahead.
Oh, now
and
you're
go
talking.
For it.
Yeah. Might be another polarising referendum, though, to be honest.
Well, you can avoid that. That's the beauty of a small whānau. But, you know, look, anybody can have a flag. But generally speaking, the rise of flags came about with nationalism, which, you know, goes back to the 18th and 19th century. And it started really in earnest with the American Declaration of Independence and then the French Revolution. And then you saw different countries, especially in Europe, sort of geopolitically suss themselves out, if you want to use that expression. And so they were thinking, you know, what symbol best represents us? And that's when you see a real rise in the number of flags representing different countries.
Worth a quick chat about the Tino Rangatiratanga flag. Where does that fit into to our nation's history, and what can we learn from that design, if anything?
Yeah, look, that's a really good flag design. It's very symbolic of Te Ao Māori, with the koru being represented in the different realms of being, te koru, te pō, te ao marama. And it's, I mean, it's Māori, it's Indigenous. What I found quite interesting about that were the transnational influences that came into play. So I sat down with Honi Harawira and interviewed him about it, and he did say that the influence for that flag had come from Australia, from the Aboriginal flag, and that flag in turn had come from the Tent Embassy in the early 1970s that was set up in Canberra. So there you're seeing Aboriginal rights being reasserted regarding land rights. Harawira goes over there, or Te Kawariki, the Ngāpuhi-based protest group, and they see the Aboriginal flag depicted in red fern and thought, gee, wouldn't it be cool to have a flag represent Māori? So they hold a competition on the eve of the Seski centenary of the signing of the Treaty of Waitangi in 1990, and that became the winning design.
Love it. Andrew says Jamaica has a great, easily recognisable flag. Have you had a look at that one?
Yes, I can, and I do remember it. It is. It's, again, it's very simple. It's three colours, black with a yellow cross and then green on the other sides. And again, you know, a very simple, to-the-point flag design. So it does well.
Someone wants to know, what's the difference between a flag and a logo, and is it important?
Yeah, one of the criticisms I heard of the Lockwood design, thinking back to the referendum, was that it was a sign of clip art. But I actually took that as a compliment for a flag design because, you know, again, we're looking at its simplicity, and clip art to me is something that's simple. And certainly when you think of the Canadian flag and the use of the maple leaf is used as a logo of the country. So I think, you know, if you're able to tick both boxes, it's actually not a bad outcome, and it's actually, you know, a credit to the flag designer.
Okay, if I made you dictator of New Zealand and you're a flag specialist, what are you going to do? What are you going to give us?
I'm probably going to go with something to do with the silver fern, probably with two colours. And the reason I say that is because the silver fern, I believe, has been the de facto symbol of this country for over 100 years. It's well ingrained in all our memories, and it has a beautiful past and story that comes with it. And I think that really encapsulates who we are. It has a very rich Māori history as well as a very rich Pākehā history. So I really do like the silver fern.
Any worries about having a black national flag?
I think it would be unique. It would be interesting to test the waters on that. I'd like to, you know, pick the public's brain a little bit more. But we certainly don't have pirates on the high seas anymore, Jesse, so I think we might be safe.
Thanks for your time today. It's really lovely to spend some time chatting. Dr. Malcolm Mulholland, good to talk to you today. Cheers.
Thanks, Jesse.